Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. It was 10 years ago that a group of book lovers came up with an idea of a community book club. That's now become BookSmart Tulsa, an important part of Tulsa's culture. Over the past decade, BookSmart has hosted nearly 1,000 author events. In fact, they'll hit their 1,000th later this summer, and hosted some of the most important writers, historians, and journalists working today. Along the way, the group morphed into the Tulsa Literary Coalition, which has culminated in the establishment of a nonprofit independent bookstore in the city, Magic City Books. Today, I'm joined by the founder of BookSmart Tulsa and the president of the Literary Coalition, Jeff Martin. One of the events to celebrate the 10th anniversary takes place this Sunday at Congregation B'nai Emunah, which is a frequent partner to BookSmart, in conjunction with their monthly deli evening. It'll also feature an evening of book bingo featuring giveaway of books. That takes place this Sunday evening at 6 o'clock at the synagogue. Jeff Martin joins us to talk about the history and the future of BookSmart Tulsa. Jeff Martin, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us, and congratulations on the 10th anniversary of BookSmart Tulsa.
Thank you very much. It's gone by in a flash.
Yeah, it has really made a tremendous difference to the city's culture. How did BookSmart get started? It didn't start out as like these big author events, did it?
No, it started out in the spring of 2009. My good friend Mary Beth Babcock and I started an idea, which was book clubs. Up until that point in my life had been very boring affairs and, you know, stuff that kind of was relegated to, at that time, what I thought were just older people just sitting around having boring discussions about books and a lot of entropy involved. People would get real excited at the beginning and then it would just fade away in a few months. So I was thinking, well, what can we do for kind of the younger generation?
Or devolved into something involved food and drink more than the books.
Yeah, it became more of a social than... Yeah. You know, and I was 28 years old and I wanted something to, you know, appeal to people my age or younger. And I thought having beer might help. So we thought about doing this thing called Book Pub rather than Book Club. And we reached out to our friends at McNally's and said, hey, can we do a book club on the top floor of the bar there? And we invited people and we really kind of early jumped into social media. We didn't have any money to advertise or do anything like that. So really grassroots kind of thing. And I was hoping for 40 or 50 people. And that first one in the spring of 2009, we had hundreds of people show up to talk about books, to have drinks. And our operating motto at the time was, you know, not everyone likes books and beer, but most people like at least one. You know? And so there's an entry point for most people here. And I was overwhelmed by the response. I was not expecting that. And so it was really like that. The idea was it was just going to be this monthly book club / pub experience. But like every other book club in the world, I saw that the month later or the third month, that core audience, even though we had hundreds of people, it was still big, but it was smaller each time. And that was because we were reaching only to that one group and life intervenes and they get busy and we weren't bringing new people into the fold every time. And so by the summer of that year, we decided to scrap that model and start this author series.
So was it actually you picked a book or was it a number of books being discussed? I mean, when you have hundreds of people, it's pretty hard to have a conversation where people contribute on one book.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be completely candid and people who know me well will know this is true. You know, big ideas are my thing and logistics and details never have been. So there were some chaotic moments in those early time periods, but it was mostly fun. We were kind of riding high on the energy that was created by it, and people were really thrilled to just, I think, be in a space with like-minded people. And when you go to a place and you see that your intellectual tribe, for lack of a better word, exists in a place like that you may not realize exists, it's very invigorating to you, and I think it makes you think of your place in the city you live in a different way. So I think that was a gain. In terms of how effective it was as a deep dive into those early books, it probably wasn't. People were mostly probably reading them on their own. But what's funny is you would have little clusters. You know, we had some formal components to it, but you'd have kind of 10 or 12 people at a time that find their little spot in the bar and they'd talk about the book. So it had an interesting format, but it was not sustainable though.
Yeah, but you had a background in doing author events, so obviously this was an easy switch.
Yeah, I'd worked in bookstores for a long time before that and had been doing that since my early 20s. And when it came time to transition it over to something else, the idea was like, if we do an author event every month, as opposed to the general book club idea, if the topics and authors change every month, we will at least have the opportunity to bring new people in because the interest will change. So if we have a mystery author one month and then we have a cookbook author the next month, maybe we peel off a few from each time who become quote unquote regulars. And that did happen. But the once a month thing didn't last very long. It became a lot more than that quite quickly. Our first event ever was, funnily enough, at Philbrook Museum of Art, where I work as my actual day job. And I've been there almost the full time that I've had Booksmart Tulsa. And I did that event before I even worked there. But it was with an author named Rivka Galchin, who grew up in Norman, Oklahoma, and writes for The New Yorker. And she's written some amazing novels. And it was total nepotism. I reached out to her saying, hey, you're from Oklahoma. I'd love for our first author event to be someone with ties to the state. She had just been named one of the 20 best writers under 40 by The New Yorker and had a lot of buzz right then. And so she was our very first person. It was such a cool thing to have our very first author be an Oklahoman. And
I remember, I didn't go to the event, but I remember coming here. I think she was on the show when she was here. And
it was great. We had a packed house. I mean, for a novelist who's not known by name, and it was for her debut novel, we had a full house. I mean, and it really shocked the people. I will say this, doing it at the museum, I think I can say this because I work there now. In those early days when I was kind of saying, hey, I need a venue to use, there were some discussions with the staff there where they were kind of having some internal dialogues about, well, is a museum the right place for a book event? Are books art? You know, like there were some really like interesting discussions happening because it just wasn't the thing people did at the time. And we needed places to do stuff. We've never, even to this day, really ever paid for a venue. All the venues have been kind enough to give us space, but especially back then, we had no resources to do that.
Yeah, and you set it up as a nonprofit too, as opposed to a way of making a business for yourself.
Yeah, I probably somewhat stupidly, but yeah, even those early days, you know, we didn't have the capacity to sell books, so we were having other bookstores sell books at our events. So we weren't even making any money off those events. It really was a passion project in the real basic sense of the word. I just wanted to create something where people could gather and have an interesting time. And we've had great book events. I mean, my great mentor, Teresa Miller, who has been a real important person in my life, had been doing events at the time with the Celebration of Books. The library has always done great author events, but they're not frequent. You know, there's
they're concentrated events. Yeah. Right.
And I wanted something where when I would travel to other places, it's like, well, I'd look in a magazine and be like, oh, there's five or six book events happening this week. How can we get something like that? And so,
what do you think the factors that made it so successful?
I would say partnerships would be a huge one because, like I said, in the early days, we had no resources. So even though it seemed maybe like a one or two person operation, it took the venues letting us use their space for nothing. Hotels giving us rooms for the authors, restaurants giving me vouchers to give so the authors could eat while they were here. Because I would have to offer all those things to the publishers and publicists to even make them consider coming here. So it wasn't a loss. You know, there was no risk really on their end. So it did take a lot of partnerships. And also, I think just tonally, it was different. I wanted our things to feel more like a concert and less like a lecture. I kind of hate the term lecture. I like the term conversation or a talk or a chat, something that feels more participatory, has more components. We would always have like bands, local bands open for the acts, or we'd have beer, cocktails. And the tone and vibe was just very different than what people were used to.
Yeah. It also occurred at a time when the popular perception was, and I believe this is somewhat erroneous, but the popular perception is that books aren't as important to the culture as they were a generation ago. In fact, I think during the time Booksmart Tulsa is building this momentum, you're seeing regularly the end of bookstores, the end of, you know, will people, everybody be reading on a Kindle? Will, you know, will books be important 10 years, 15 years? Are people going to look to screens instead of books for understanding the world?
When the Amazon Kindle first came out in 2007, I believe, it changed everything, but it didn't change it forever because what happened was you have to realize three things occurred. E-books arrived in a real way. There had been attempts before, but nothing that really hit the culture like that. Those arrived. The economic recession hit big time. Borders closed. I mean, the second largest chain in the world closed. And there were threats that, you know, there could be more.
It's interesting that building at 21st Street is still standing mostly empty to this day.
Yeah, it's just kind of, I spent so much time in there. So those things all happened, and the pendulum swung way to the other side because people were interested in this new technology, you know, but you can't take away the economic factors of it. If the recession hadn't occurred, the Great Recession, and the Kindle arrived, I don't think, for example, Borders would have gone out of business. It took all of these things happening at once to really create the environment. So that all happens and people freak out. Independent bookstores are closing. But that's more based on the larger world economy and what was happening at the time. So that happens. And then we decide to start this thing right after that. And I would have people tell me all the time, you know, there aren't audiences for this anymore. People don't want this. But I was always, especially at that time, because I wasn't selling the books. I was thinking, the people I know read. Reading had never dropped the way that maybe buying had dropped. There was a big difference between reading and buying at that time. So I was interested in cultivating the readers. I wasn't as interested in the economics. Of course, I wanted the books to sell because the more they sold at the events, the more people we would get. And that was a self-fulfilling prophecy in a certain sense. And the bookstores that we worked with here locally to sell the books would be happy and all those things. But I knew that if we could cultivate the audience, hopefully the other pieces would fall in place.
Well, I also wonder if just sort of the change of the democratization of pop culture has changed as well. I'm thinking about, you know, how anybody can make a movie now. The equipment has gotten cheaper to the point that anybody can make one. In music, you know, the recording industry is cratered. And so now the way any musician or artist makes money is touring, not making records anymore. That's not a part of the income. Is the same true for the publishing industry? Or
I do see parallels to that. You know, I often think about it like this. We talked about the pendulum swinging over to a certain direction when all those things happened after the Great Recession. When I was a kid, you know, records died, albums, LPs, vinyl died, and CDs took over. Tapes were there for a little while, but I never expected to see vinyl in record stores or in stores ever again. And now you go to Best Buy or Walmart or even Barnes & Noble, and they have fairly large vinyl selections. And that's not because they're trying to be hip. You know, stores don't carry stuff that they don't think will sell. So there's obviously a market for it. Now, is it ever going to be like it was in 1977? No, but there is that. And I think with books, the same thing has happened. Is it ever going to be like it was when you would go to the Doubleday bookstore in New York City in 1961 and it was the center of all culture in the city? And, you know, Norman Mailer was the Tonight Show's headlining guest. No, it's never going to be that again. But I think it has swung back to a middle space where you're seeing more independent bookstores have opened in the past handful of years than in the several decades before. And yes, some of it is hobbyists. I think, you know, when a trend comes about, you'll see more of those things happening. But people aren't doing it, I don't think, because they're planning on going out of business. There's an economic model at the base of it.
Yeah. And at the same time, I think because of the sheer number of books published, I think it's on the impetus of the writer, because they still are paid by royalty of book sales to get out and support their book.
Yeah, it's funny. You mentioned bands going on tour, and it's funny how the world changes. The world in music right now is almost more similar to the 1950s than it is to the 1980s, because at that time, everything was single driven. And now you think about iTunes, everything is singles. Albums don't matter. People don't buy albums, but singles are kind of dominating. And touring, right? Touring is back. If you want to make money as a band, you have to be out there touring. So, and that's kind of how that worked. The album era is kind of dead.
But is it the same true for your authors?
Yeah, I think so. But I think it's not as easy, meaning if you're a young band and you want to just hit the pavement and go out and play as many dates as you can, that's true. If you're an author and you say, I'm going to go do as many events as I can, usually you don't have the economic fortitude to go out and do that, because the publishers are mostly going to be putting that touring money behind sure bets. You don't see a lot of it getting put into maybes. There could be a debut that just the buzz is so high and maybe it got bought at auction for $2 million and that's going to be the next big thing, like this Where the Crawdads Sing, which has been this major book breakout this year by a 70-year-old author, first-time novelist. That's a phenomenon, and that does happen. But what happens with that usually is you'll see the touring happening added on once the phenomenon takes place.
But for the bread and butter of BookSmart Tulsa events is those, I don't want to say struggling authors, but they're, you know, they don't have the huge following. I mean, you do huge events, but the bread and butter of what you do are people trying to get their name out there.
Yeah, I always think I'm very proud of the fact that if you look at our full list of people that we've had here, it certainly has a lot of the kind of Mount Rushmore people on it. But we've been so lucky to have so many events with first-time novelists, local writers, hopefully more and more local. And, you know, this summer we're going to probably hit our 1,000th author event around August. And I would say half of those have been people in that space. And what's cool about that is none of those, maybe a handful out of this 1,000, have been a dud. And usually that's because there's a tornado siren going off. It's not about the author. But we usually have what I would say is expected crowds. You know, 50 people for a first-time novelist is amazing. And we usually get more than what we would expect. And we'll get feedback from publishers. And, you know, in New York, for example, a big author could be doing an event like on a random Wednesday night and 70 people will show up. One is because just the saturation of the market, but the time we're able to put into it, the trust that we've built with our audience, the connections with local media, you know, you've been so great to host so many of our authors here on the show. The newspaper here has been a huge asset to us. Some of traditional media and all the word of mouth stuff really does create a network that kind of ensures that we're going to have that base audience.
My guest today is Jeff Martin, the founder of Booksmart Tulsa. Booksmart is celebrating its 10th anniversary, and I know there are going to be some big events during that 10th anniversary year. But before we talk about those, I want to talk about the second part of Booksmart Tulsa, which was, again, this push to create an independent bookstore, which ended up in Magic City Books through the Tulsa Literary Coalition. Did that come out of Booksmart directly or just sort of like a side point?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's impossible to say that without the audience that we had cultivated in the years leading up to it, that it kind of proved the concept that, yes, there is an audience for this. So when Steve's Books and Sundries closed, having been around for decades and decades, there was some rumblings. You know, I'd have so many like local author friends. It'd be the people that you would think of when you think about kind of Tulsa's premier authors. There were talk about should we collectively buy it, bring it back to life? You know, so there was some kind of some save Steve's kind of conversations happening, but that kind of fizzled. And then we thought, okay, well, we're going to be in a city with not one independent bookstore that sells new books. We have some great used bookstores, but that's a different model. And I just think, you know, how can I run this book organization where we bring in the biggest authors in the world and I bring them here and they say, do you have an independent bookstore? And we go, no, sorry, we don't. That just didn't seem like it would be a good fit. And so in early 2015, discussions began between myself and my good friend Cindy Halsey, who was at the time at the Tulsa Library and who has unfortunately since passed away, about what we could do. So we took Booksmart Tulsa, which had an existence and in its form, and kind of put it under an umbrella of a new organization, a 501c3 nonprofit called the Tulsa Literary Coalition. And under that would be a couple of things. Booksmart Tulsa would be kind of the programming wing. So we'd still keep doing all of our events. But then the second big component was, let's open an independent bookstore that's a nonprofit and funds all the programming we do. So it seemed like a crazy idea at the time. And in some ways it was.
But does it still seem crazy today? Now, no. A couple of years in?
It's kind of funny, you know, I don't have any children, but I'm sure I've heard people say, you know, they don't realize how they did it all. They, you know, it's like the kid's grown and you look back and it seems so difficult at the time, but you look back and think, oh, it wasn't too bad. You know, you got through it. And yes, there have been a lot of high points, a couple of low points. It's not been easy. But in November of 2017, when we opened the store, so it took about 2 years to get from the concept to opening the doors. And there were some stutters and steps and obstacles in the way there. But when we opened it on that week of Thanksgiving in November of 2017 on a Monday morning, and we had hundreds and hundreds of people outside kind of cheering for the opening of it. And I mean, it was definitely top 5 days of my whole life, you know?
Yeah.
And it's stayed good since then.
That's great. When you look back at some of the events you brought in, are there any personal highlights? I know you have some great road stories of some of the authors showing up, some of them showing up in various stages of comprehension and sobriety, but what are some of the highlights for you?
Definitely, you know, when we announced Magic City Books as the store, you know, we had the Tulsa Literary Coalition, and we were going to have our first, what I would say, coming out party for Magic City, because we wanted to start selling books. You know, I have to remember, from 2009 to summer of 2016, every event I'd ever done, we didn't get a dime from, because I was having other bookstores sell books. So June of 2016, I wanted to do something where we did our first event under the banner of Magic City before the store even opened, but we would start selling books. So I wanted something big. So we got Stephen King, which I thought was a pretty decent get. It was between, you know, we said, who's the biggest author in the world? It's either Stephen King or J.K. Rowling. And she doesn't live in the United States, so it seemed easier to get Stephen King. So we had this massive event at Kane's Ballroom. I believe the tickets sold out online in 31 seconds, something like that. So that was definitely a high point, because it was kind of the culmination of a bunch of things. But over the years, there have been so many. We've done kind of epic events at, like, the Central Library when it was closing for renovation. We destroyed the inside of it with Chuck Palahniuk, the author of Fight Club. We had this adult pajama party that was just unbelievably crazy. And just all kinds of things. But when I look back at the early years, when it's just literally me with these authors trying to show them around and have a good time, we would get into all kinds of adventures. I remember I was with this one author, and he wanted to go to the top of the Williams Tower. And I was like, well, you know, I bet we could figure out how to get up there. I had no idea how to. But so after the event, we were just driving around, and I would take him around, show them Tulsa and do these things. So we go there, and we walk in and just go to the, you know, stairwell and start walking up. Somehow we found our way to a stairwell. We got up there. It was took forever to get up there. You know, I don't even know, what's it, 50, 60 stories tall. So we get up on the roof and are having this amazing view and having a blast. But then we realized that the door shut behind us was locked. And we were trapped up on the roof, and I didn't have any idea how to get down. So we had to go around to another part of the roof, found a door that was unlocked, and had to walk all the way back down. But when we walked all the way back down, laughing the whole time because we thought we were going to be stuck up there, when I opened the door to go back down to the lobby, the door opened into the security office or some kind of thing like that. And I had to pretend like, oh, hey, how did we get down here? You know, and people just saying, what the heck is going on here? So that was about a 3-hour misadventure. But we would just get into all kinds of fun. It seems like, it feels like I was a teenager at that time, but a lot of fun.
You almost were.
Yeah.
My guest today is Jeff Martin. As we celebrate BookSmart Tulsa's 10th anniversary, they'll be having their 1,000th author event coming up sometime during the summer.
Yeah.
And I know, coming up on this 10th anniversary, you're going to have a special event this weekend, right?
Yeah, so we wanted to do something. You know, one of the things that we've always tried to do is not take ourselves too seriously and take the stuffiness out of this whole conceit of literary culture. And so we thought it'd be fun to just do a book bingo party. So one of the places we've done, I'd say, a good third of our big events is Congregation B'nai Emunah Synagogue. They've been amazing friends to us. There's probably a 5 or 6 venues that have just been our kind of pillars, you know, All Souls Unitarian, B'nai Emunah, Philbrook, of course, and a lot of great, wonderful spaces when we need a big room. And so they do this fantastic Jewish deli every month. They make their own brisket, and it's just a really fun thing. So I said, hey, you guys do that monthly thing. Why don't we do a book bingo party during the deli, and we'll have brisket, books, beer, and bingo. And it just sounded like a fun thing. So we're gonna just have a blast. We're gonna eat, we're gonna drink, we're gonna pull balls out of the cage, we're gonna give away a lot of free books and stuff and talk about books. And I think just celebrate 10 years and have a blast. So that's this Sunday, the 14th, on Bastille Day, for no reason whatsoever.
Well, you also have some big events during the 10th anniversary year. I know Salman Rushdie's coming back.
Yeah.
Anybody else we should be aware of?
Salman Rushdie's really exciting because he came before we opened the bookstore, and he joined our advisory board for Magic City and helped us get a lot of other people too, just by his name being associated with us as well. So it'll be exciting to have him back. And he's written this new book that's his riff on Don Quixote, which is going to be a totally bonkers kind of thing. What I'm really excited about, and it's sold out like crazy, which, and I mentioned it earlier, is an author named Delia Owens, who wrote this book called Where the Crawdads Sing. And it's just such an amazing story. She's a writer who's written a lot of nonfiction, kind of nature and science-based nonfiction, but she has this novel that just came out of nowhere. It's dominated the bestseller list. And it's I love these things because even though, yes, these can be somewhat manufactured through marketing and things like that, you cannot truly create a phenomenon. And this really has become that. And it's such a cool story of this woman who's 69 or 70 years old, has this debut novel. No one's ever heard of her. It's not a genre-based novel. It's a true kind of human-based fiction story. And it's just blowing up. And she's coming in September. That thing sold out like almost Stephen King proportions. I mean, who knew? Yeah. So we're really excited about that.
Who's out there on your book signing bucket list still to come?
Well, Philip Roth was for years, but he has since died. Yeah. But we are going to do a fun thing with his biographer, Blake Bailey. And this is the 50th anniversary of Portnoy's Complaint. And he's going to come in August and share some stuff that he's found in the process of writing this biography.
Because I don't think that biography's out yet.
It's not even coming out for a couple of years. So he's going to share some stuff about the making of Portnoy's Complaint. So Philip Roth was definitely on the list. But as far as living people, you know, I would love to do something with Michael Chabon. He's done stuff with the Central Library before, but he hasn't done an event with me. I've done events with his wife, Ayelet Waldman, many times. So that's someone, you know, the people that would never do a thing but are still alive. Cormac McCarthy is definitely number one. And he lives in New Mexico, so it's not that far. Larry McMurtry, I've never done anything with him. I'd love to do something with Judy Blume. And I'll tell you a crazy story about Judy Blume. I've been trying to get Judy Blume to come do an event with me probably the whole time I've been doing this whole thing. Because she's such an important author in terms of someone who crosses over to young people, older readers, generations. Well, one day I was at Philbrook at my day job, and I was out in the garden, and I met Judy Blume. She was walking around in the gardens, and I recognized her because that's the kind of business I'm in. So I was dumbfounded. I think I said something like to her. I said, like, what are you doing here? You know? And she has friends here in Tulsa who are connected to her life down in Key West, Florida, where she lives. And she owns a bookstore down there too. And she's like, oh, I'm just visiting some friends. And I will tell you this. I hate to be opportunistic, but I almost asked her, I was like, well, what are you doing this evening at like 7? Because I bet I could pull together about 500 people between now and then to come do an event. I
you missed one there,
yeah,
Jeff.
I was smart enough not to bring it up, but she was so kind. And you know, but she's one of those rare people who have impacted so many generations. And she's kind of done the controversial thing and, you know, are you there, God? It's me, Margaret. And she's impacted a lot of people. So she's definitely on my list.
Jeff, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Jeff Martin is the founder of Booksmart Tulsa and the president of the Tulsa Literary Coalition. Booksmart Tulsa is celebrating its 10th anniversary. There'll be an event Sunday evening at 6 o'clock at B'nai Amuna in conjunction with their monthly deli evening, featuring an evening of book bingo to thank the community. That's Sunday evening at 6 at the synagogue. Of course, there'll be an event this evening with an author, Timothy Thompson, at Magic City Books as well. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.